If you'd like to be turning in your Bibles to Luke chapter 23, we'll be there shortly. The person we're going to talk about this morning has been immortalized in songbooks. He has been written about in the Bible, so he will go down through history for what he has done. His life and his public service were recorded by all of the ancient writers. He was the fifth governor or procurator of Judea. This was the only province of the Roman Empire in Palestine that was overseen by a Roman rather than a Jew. He had a military force of some 3,000 soldiers under him there in Jerusalem. His judicial authority was supreme, and except in cases of Roman citizens, he could extend whatever punishments were necessary. And he could and would, if necessary, with Roman citizens, send the appeal to the emperor. Death sentences required the governor's confirmation and were executed by him at this time. Most of the governors during this time badly abused their authority. And Judea, at the time of Christ, was constantly in turmoil, mostly over religious division. This is the type of background we have, the volatile conditions there were when Christ stood before this man, when he stood before Pilate. Pilate was appointed procurator in 26 AD, and for a governor of this province, he served a very long term of 10 years. There were lots of disagreements and feuds and spats between Pilate and the Jews during that time. In fact, according to Luke 13, chapter 1, Pilate had even resorted at one time to slaughtering the Jews. One thing is sure. There was no love lost between Pilate and the Jews. He offered them even in the title over the cross. He offended them and he irritated them by refusing to remove the title that he put above the cross, John 19 and verse 22. Pilate seemed like a typically worldly man whose goodness wasn't strong enough to overcome his personal considerations. Pilate's reign ended after he was overly harsh and brutal. He killed several Samaritans at Mount Gerizim who had gathered together in their religious zeal for a religious ceremony. Legend has it that Pilate committed suicide. Very old tradition, now get this isn't the Bible telling us this, but it's very old tradition, claims that Pilate's wife became a Christian. In fact, her name is thought to have been Claudia Procula or Procla. Some have even identified Pilate's wife as Claudia, the one mentioned in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 21. But of course, of this and Pilate's death, we can't be absolutely certain because the Bible doesn't tell us so. Pilate is certainly not a man that we can hold in high esteem. In the Gospels where we meet Pilate, he seems like a man who on one hand wanted to let Jesus free, but on the other hand, he didn't have the stomach to fight the Jews over this matter. Pilate made at least 4 moral and spiritual mistakes. And those 4 mistakes are what I want to talk about this morning. Number 1, from Luke chapter 23, he tried to shift his responsibility to others. Listen as I read, starting in verse 1. Then the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Then Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him and said, "It is as you say." So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, I find no fault in this man. But they were the more fierce, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that, as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. You know, Pilate didn't want to get involved in a situation that, at least at first, he considered probably to have been trivial. And as soon as he found a convenient way out of it, he quickly took that convenient way. He sent him to Herod for Herod to settle the matter. You know, so often, people try to resist taking personal responsibility for Christ. Sometimes people will actually even blame others for their not obeying Christ. They will deny their responsibility even while at the same time they expect others to obey Him and serve Him. They may even think that they could possibly be saved by the faith that other people have in Him. From Pilate's mistake, we learn that we cannot leave our decisions on the doorsteps of others. We individually must either accept or reject Jesus. Turn back with me, if you would, a few chapters to Luke chapter 11, verse 23. Jesus says, this is a verse about making a personal choice. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters. You see, friends, even if we don't make a decision at all, even if the people you know and love, your family members, your neighbors, your co-workers, even if they don't decide to follow Jesus, they've made a decision to not follow Jesus. We simply cannot push our responsibility off to other people. Point number two, also from Luke chapter 23, is that Pilate sought to compromise with evil. Starting in verse 13. Then Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, said to them, you have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accuse him. No, neither did Herod, for I sent you back to him, and indeed, nothing deserving of death has been done by him. Now, I want you briefly, before we discuss this, look up just a few verses to verse 12. And see what the inspired writer says. That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. Pilate had nothing intrinsically wrong with his reasoning power over the way he originally dealt with Jesus. He had been right in the matter when he judged that Jesus was completely innocent. He found that to be true himself. So did, he said, Herod, found him to be innocent. He had been fair. He had examined Christ, he said. The right thing to have done at that very point in time would have been to release Jesus unharmed. But the problem was that Pilate was trying to satisfy the crowd. In fact, in this account in Mark 15:15, the Bible says Pilate wanted to gratify the crowd. And he released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. You see, Pilate knew what was right and what was wrong in this situation. He knew that the mob wanted Jesus dead. Pilate said, "Therefore, I'll punish him and release him." Some translations say, "I'll chastise him and release him." Yet he found out that nothing short of Christ's death would satisfy this mob of Jews. You know, so often today, we try to compromise concerning Jesus. We oftentimes are afraid of offending those who are in religious error. So what do? Oftentimes what we do is we soften our teaching. And at other times, we are even apologetic in our tone when we're talking to people about the one true church. God never let it be said about us in Granby that we would ever do that. You see, we can't allow ourselves to be ashamed of what the Lord forcefully taught. He was not a shrinking violet about talking about the church that he came to shed his own precious blood for. Jesus said in Matthew 15:13, forcefully he said, "My Father will uproot every plant that he has not planted." Ephesians 4:4 says, "There is one body." Ephesians 1:22-23 talks about the church, which is his body. Colossians 1:18 says that he is the head of the body, the church. We can't be afraid. We can't allow ourselves to be afraid of sticking out in the crowd. In fact, we're supposed to stick out in the crowd, especially when we take a moral stance. Especially when we take a stance about things like abortion or homosexuality or personal issues like our own personal conduct and about participating in worldly things and worldly entertainment. We cannot be afraid of being different than the rest of the world. We must learn from Pilate's mistake that you cannot compromise with evil. Paul put it this way in Ephesians 4:27, nor give place to the devil, which is exactly what we are doing if we compromise concerning Jesus. You know, the devil isn't going to settle for anything short of complete surrender on our part. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 and 9, Peter writes, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world." The devil is going to accept nothing less than completely devouring us and bringing us down to hell with him. You know, even as far back as, and maybe even farther, but at least as far back as Moses. Moses knew that there could be no compromise with Pharaoh. Moses' message was this: "Let my people go to worship the Lord God." But you know, Pharaoh wasn't satisfied with that. Pharaoh kind of wanted to dicker with him a little bit. He wanted to get him to compromise a little bit. He said, "No, why don't you go ahead and worship God in this land? You know, I don't want you to go too far away, and I'd like for you to leave your wives and your children behind. And also, I want you to leave your possessions behind when you do." And you know, Satan seeks to do the exact same thing today. He would rather, instead of us going out of the world, he'd rather that we stay in the world and act like the rest of the people in the world. He would rather that we not go too far away from the norm that the world has established. In other words, the devil wouldn't want you to change for the better in as far as serving God is concerned. The devil wouldn't want you to influence your family members to serve the Lord. He'd rather you just sat back and let them be lost. And the devil does not want you to put your possessions, your treasure, your talents to work for God. He'd rather you left those possessions alone. Remember what we learned from Pilate. You and I cannot compromise with evil. Point number three. Mistake Pilate made was he thought that he could just wash his hands of the situation. In Matthew chapter 27, in verse 24, we find Pilate trying to do just that. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it. Pilate looked out and he saw the ruckus. He saw the riot that was about to start, and he wanted to minimize his own part, his own responsibility for it. You know, by this time, by the time we find Pilate washing his hands, his wife had already told him about her dream. Look up at verse 19. While he, Pilate, was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, have nothing to do with this just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him. He'd already been warned by his wife not to mess with Jesus. Jesus himself had already had two private conversations with him, at least, possibly more than two. The more contact that Pilate had with Christ, the more convicted he became that he was not guilty. But you see, his moral courage failed him ultimately. His ceremonial act of washing his hands did nothing to excuse his guilt. Jesus told him in John chapter 19 and verse 11 that he had sinned. Jesus answered, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. He's talking about the Jews delivering him to Pilate. Said they've sinned a greater sin than you, implying that Pilate, you also have sinned in this matter. From Pilate we learn that you cannot wash your hands of Christ. There simply isn't enough water, simply isn't enough soap in the world for us to rid ourselves of the responsibility of Christ and of obeying Christ. You cannot take the moral high ground and stand above the fight for Christ. We are sinners and we are part of the fight. We cannot, with few words or with many words or the washing of hands, disclaim our part and our responsibility for Christ's crucifixion, because he hung on that cross for you and I. And until we're convinced that we are sinners in need of God's grace, we are going to act like Pilate, and we are going to think that we can wash our hands of his blood. But you know, from Romans chapter 3, verse 10 and verse 23, we find out that Jesus died for each one of us and that we are all in need of his blood. We know from 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 6 that he gave his life a ransom for all, for everybody. And we know from 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 14 and 15, that he died for all of us. We need to understand that no matter how much rationalizing we can do, how much soul searching we can do, If that rationalizing and soul searching leads to this idea that we can wash our hands of our responsibility for Christ, it's all for naught, because we simply can't do it. Point number four. Mistake that Pilate made in the end was that he gave up. Back to Matthew chapter 27 and verse 26. Then he released Barabbas to them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. In the end, Pilate lacked the strength. He lacked the backbone to do what was right. Ultimately, Pilate handed Jesus over. He did not stick by Jesus, even though he knew that the death of this convicted man would be injustice. He knew that. He knew he was condemning a guiltless man. But you see, Pilate's problem was that his own interest and his own self-preservation were more important to him than condemning a guiltless man. And you know, sadly, people today follow Pilate's example. When faced with a choice between the world and the Lord, many times people just give up. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, "No one can serve two masters." What's this verse about? It's about making a choice between God or the world. "For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and mammon. In Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 and 19, "And others are the ones of whom seed was sown among the thorns. These are the ones who have heard the word, and the worries of the world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful." You see, oftentimes it is the case. The people are baptized into Christ, added to the Lord's church by the Lord, and then these things creep up. These everyday problems, the worries of the world, well, how am I going to make it? How in the world can I live if I do what Christ says that I must do? How in the world can I give as much as I'm supposed to give? And you know what happens? That faith begins to be choked off a little bit at a time until you become unfruitful. And when you become unfruitful, then you wither and die. Many people who give up are like Demas. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 10. Demas liked the world and he loved this present world too much. He is too concerned about what a good time he was having and how much he enjoyed this life. Well, folks, this life cannot even be compared, either in the joy and the glory and the happiness, much less the time involved. Even if you live to be 100 plus years old, it's nothing compared to the time that will be spent in eternity. Many people are overcome with sorrow and hardships, and they leave God because of it. This is exactly the opposite of what James teaches in James chapter 1 and verse 12. He teaches that through these trials and tribulations, the hardships of life, if we will endure through these things, then we will stand approved before God. Many people find Christ's expectations, his teachings, to be too hard to follow. In John chapter 6, verse 66, we read, "From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. They found the teachings of Christ to be too hard. They thought they could not live up to them. Many people who give up cannot stop serving sin and satisfying their fleshly desires. In Romans chapter 8 and verse 6, Paul writes, "But now we have been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit, not in the oldness of the letter." Well, what is it that Paul's talking about that held them? That's nothing other than satisfying the flesh. Many people who give up only want enough religion for Sunday, and they don't want to or won't live up to their faith the rest of the week. All of these choices are exactly the same thing as what Pilate did. All of them amount to giving up Jesus. You know, we can do that. We can give up Jesus. We have the right to do that. We have the ability to do that. But that choice carries consequences. In Mark chapter 8 and verse 38, Jesus said, "For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man also will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." If we're ashamed of Christ in this life, we can be assured that we will be more ashamed in the life to follow. We need to learn from the mistake that Pilate made, the tragic choice that Pilate made of giving up Christ. In conclusion, Pilate asked the crowd, said, "What do you want me to do with Jesus?" But you know, the crowd in the end couldn't make that decision for Pilate. Pilate had to make that choice himself. No matter what else anybody else said, the choice was ultimately his. Centuries later, this is going to be familiar to you, an unknown writer wrote a poem about this. It's been put to music. Jesus is standing in Pilate's hall, friendless, forsaken, betrayed by all. "Hearken, what meaneth the sudden call? What will you do with Jesus?" Jesus is standing on trial still. We need to remember that word when we sing that song. On trial still. "You can be false to him if you will. You can be faithful through good or ill. What will you do with Jesus? Will you evade him as Pilate tried, or will you choose him whate'er betide? Vainly you struggle from him to hide. What will you do with Jesus? Will you, like Peter, your Lord deny, or will you scorn from his foes to fly? Daring for Jesus to live or die, what will you do with Jesus? Jesus, I give thee my heart today. Jesus, I'll follow thee all the way. Gladly obeying thee, will you say, this will I do with Jesus. What will you do with Jesus, my friend? Neutral you cannot be." That's the story, isn't it? Neutral you cannot be. "Someday your heart will be asking, O friend, what will he do with me?" We need to understand this last point. In this life, in flesh and blood, Jesus is on trial for you, and you have to be the judge. What do I mean by that? You have to decide whether Jesus is right for you. But you need to remember, through those proceedings, that someday you will be the one on trial and Jesus will be the judge. What will you do with Jesus? You, like Pilate, cannot shift your responsibility to anyone else. You, like Pilate, cannot compromise. It's either obey or deny, one or the other. There is no compromise. You cannot wash your hands.